Since launching the Everything You Should Know website in April of 2005, we've sold many products and thousands have subscribed to receive Ariel's newsletter. It's proof that there are lots of people out there who want to write a book. During the subscription process, we ask you to submit your single biggest question about publishing, publicity, or writing a book to Ariel, so she can answer the most frequently asked ones in her newsletters and during our teleclasses. It's no surprise that lots of people don't know where to begin in the process of writing or publishing a book. But what blew both Ariel and I away was the amazing number of people who find it difficult to just get going. Ariel has the good fortune of not only writing 6 books herself, but also working with some of the most famous, prolific, and successful authors in the world. She's worked with and for hundreds of them and knows many more. It seemed appropriate that we should start at square one and help the beginning author who knows there's a book inside them that needs to be written but doesn't know how or where to begin. Several weeks ago, Ariel began calling and interviewing several authors, asking them about their process, inspiration, discipline, and resources they use to start and complete their books. Aside from perspiration and hard work, she's uncovered the patterns and processes the bestsellers use. I'd like to welcome and thank Ariel Ford, America's number one book publicist, to the studio for this very special project. How to Start Writing a Book. Top publishers and best-selling authors reveal their secret systems. Ariel, thank you for making the time to be here today.
Thanks, Mike. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Well, can you tell me what you're going to teach us in this course?
Yes, we're going to talk about the planning, preparation, and discipline that it takes to write a book or a book proposal.
Okay, so where do we begin?
Let's begin with planning. When I first sat down to write the very first Hot Chocolate for the Mystical Soul book, I wrote a little mission statement. And what it turned out to be was that I was going to write a book of inspiring, uplifting, and true mystical stories that would be about angels, miracles, and healings. That was sort of my basic mission statement. That was what my book would be about. And since I wanted to sort of follow the Chicken Soup for the Soul format, since it was already so successful, I decided I'd have 101 stories in each of my books. Now, given that I was already running my business full time, and I was working out and trying to have a life, that didn't leave a lot of extra time to write. So I decided that Saturdays and Sunday afternoons would be my writing time, and I committed that every weekend for 3 to 4 hours on Saturday and on Sunday afternoon, that is when I would write my book. And I had to stick to the schedule because that was the only time I had. But over the last few weeks, I've been talking to authors and publishers about some of the schedules they know. And here's what I've come up with. For the basic, simplest way to go about it, think of it in 3 steps. Planning, writing out your mission statement, figuring out the content, what you want to write about in general terms. Preparation, writing down every day in a little notebook different ideas that you get, titles for chapters, resources for the book, experts you may want to interview. Just constantly write down notes till you get started. And then discipline. And this is the hardest part for almost everybody. Creating a timetable that you're going to stick to so that every day at the same time you're going to sit down and write, or every weekend or every weeknight, whatever you come up with, that is going to be your strict schedule for writing. So just like you brush your teeth every single morning, you're going to have a reflex for writing that you're going to stick to.
We all have too much to do and we don't have time. So if I were going to sit down right now and say, okay, today I want to start writing my book, what would be the very first thing you'd recommend that I do?
Well, I would figure out where you're going to be writing. You know, set up a space that's clean and comfortable and creative for you. So, you know, just don't say, okay, I'm going to write in the bedroom today and I'm going to write in the living room tomorrow. You know, most of us work on computers these days, or even greater, laptops. Figure out where your writing space is. So if you have kids, you want to create this as sacred space. I had a friend who used to write in a closet. And whenever she was in her closet writing, she put a yellow scarf on the doorknob outside so that her kids knew when the yellow scarf was there, mommy was writing, and unless the house was burning down, nobody was to disturb her. So you have to figure out your location and then powwow with your family and just say, okay, this is what I'm going to be writing. This is my space. This is my time. I need you to honor that. So unless it's an emergency, you know, please respect that this is what I'm going to be writing. And I know when I was talking to John Gordon, who wrote Energy Addict, he's got very young children. So he would get up early. He would write from 5 to 7 in the morning. And then he would write like from 8 to 10 o'clock at night after the kids went to bed, because that's the only time he had. He had several restaurants he was running. He had a wife who needed attention, as we all do. And he had young children that wanted a piece of daddy. But he was committed to this new career path. He has now sold his restaurants and is living his dream and working full-time as an author, writer, speaker, expert. So that's what I would suggest. First and foremost, before pen to paper, figure out where will you be writing and make that your space. So if it means, you know, cleaning out the garage, cleaning out a closet, carving out a space in the living room, dining room, wherever, or even in your car, if you have a laptop and you've got an SUV, you know, maybe you want to be in the back seat. I don't know. Get creative. Figure out what's going to be comfortable for you.
In your experience, do most of the best-selling authors have a fixed time during the day that they work, or how do they work out the timing and scheduling?
Well, I know, like Deepak Chopra, for instance, he does not sleep a lot. He's usually, you know, in bed by 9:30, and he's up at 4 a.m. meditating. So he spends the time between, let's say if he's in town and he's going to the office, between 4 a.m. and 9 a.m., that's when he works out, meditates, and writes. Now, he writes on a legal pad. You know, he's computer savvy, but for him, writing longhand is what he likes to do. So that's his writing time. The other writing time he has is on airplanes because he travels all the time. You know, my sister, Debbie Ford, for instance, she has to stick to a very, very strict schedule. And in a little while, we'll talk about what that schedule is, where she'll get up sometimes from 3 to 5 in the morning, because that's when she actually feels quiet enough to hear the ideas that want to flow through her.
What do you recommend people do to avoid or eliminate the interruptions?
A couple of things. When you sit down to write, turn off your cell phone, your pager, your text messaging gizmos, all right? Let everybody know this is what you're doing. You know, don't bring magazines and newspapers with you. And set up, and I was going to talk about this later, but I'll talk about it now. Set up consequences for if you don't write. My sister has several of her friends that are all in different process of writing a book. So she set up a system with them where she knows how many pages a day they've committed to writing. And at the end of the week, let's say they're writing 2 pages a day, and at the end of each week, they're supposed to send her 10 pages. Whether or not she reads them is inconsequential, but they're supposed to email her 10 finished pages. If she doesn't get those 10 pages on Sunday, then there's different consequences for each of them. One of them, who is a hardcore liberal Democrat, her consequence is if she doesn't get her writing done, she has to write a $500 check to the Republican Party, which of course she doesn't want to do. And Debbie will hold it over her head if those pages don't get done. So you need to set up negative consequences if you don't think you can hold yourself accountable. Get somebody else to do it. You know, you and I are in a mastermind program together. We coach each other all the time, and we have consequences. If we don't make the calls, we don't do the buddy calls, there are negative consequences. And I have found, like when I coach my sister on writing or on anything in her life, I'll set up very expensive things. Like if she doesn't get it done, she owes me $1,000. Now, she does not want to give me $1,000, nor has she ever, because that is such a big consequence that she will get the job done, knowing that that's the alternative. So that works for a lot of us who are not as disciplined as we could be. All right, well, let's go through what Debbie does, because the first time when she was writing Dark Side of the Light Chasers, that was her first book. She'd never written anything before, and she really didn't know where to start. And at the time, we were working with Peter Gazzardi. Peter was an editor at Random House for many, many years. He's been Deepak Chopra's editor. And Peter just said to her, write me 10 pages every week. Don't edit them. Just write, and then send me the pages. And you know what? If you write 10 pages every week, when you're 3/4 of the way through a year, you will have a book. Now, it may not be a finished book. It'll certainly not be an edited finished book, but you will know then what book is trying to come through you. So I would say commit. Okay, even if it's 2 pages a day, I'm going to write 2 pages a day. Don't edit yourself. Just write. Get the ideas out. Don't go back and edit. Just write, just write, just write. And then have someone that you're accountable to send these pages to. They don't have to read them just yet, but get those pages out there. And then start getting feedback from different people. You know, if you get 90% good feedback, you know, use what you think is useful for you. And one thing Cheryl Richardson once said is, and I think this is so important, don't ask negative people for feedback. Obviously, you don't want people who are just going to, you know, sort of blow smoke, but you don't want people who are jealous of you or competitive with you to be getting feedback from, because they're not going to be looking to support you. So choose people that are close friends and family, send them your pages, and when you're ready for the feedback, then sit down with them and get the feedback. So that's the beginning process, whether we're talking about the actual book or the book proposal.
You and I both know that what we have, even in our work, when we're working together, is we have a group of what we call trusted advisors who we can occasionally send a message, a document to be perused and looked at by people that are critical thinkers. They're not afraid of hurting our feelings or telling the truth, and we get raw, honest feedback. And when we ask for it, we get a response quickly because we let them know in our subject line of an email or something that this is an important thing, and they'd be operating as a trusted advisor for us.
Right. And let's talk about honesty for a second, because, you know, people often say, well, I don't want to tell so-and-so the truth. I don't want to hurt their feelings. Well, there's a way to deliver the truth without hurting anybody's feelings. I work with somebody who, whenever he says, you know how much I love you, I know what's coming next is criticism, but it's such a setup for he's reinforcing how much he loves me, and there's something difficult he needs to share with me. You know, through the Spiritual Cinema Circle right now, we're in production on a film, and the actress who was cast as the lead didn't have current headshots for our website. And she said to me, well, I'm just going to have somebody shoot some, you know, late afternoon, and I'll email them to you. Well, this is a very beautiful woman, and the shot that she emailed me was so not attractive. It was in direct sunlight, and if you're over 8 years old, direct sunlight on a woman is not attractive. And her teeth were positively gray in this photo from shadows. And I thought, well, you know, she's this famous actress. How am I going to tell her basically this is not an attractive picture? And I thought, you know what? It's my job just to tell the truth. And I wrote her back and I said, you know what? You're a very beautiful woman and you deserve better. And by the way, this picture makes your teeth look gray. And she hadn't even noticed that. And now she's going to send us the right shot. And I delivered it with a lot of heart and sensitivity. And it was the truth. So, you know, if you hear somebody making you wrong in the process of criticism, you know what, just say, you know what, I can't really hear this right now. I need to go, and eliminate them from your list of quote unquote trusted advisors.
One of the techniques that I typically use in the sandwich technique, which is you start with something positive, you add the thing that could be improved, and then end with something positive. And that way, at least, you're putting them in a position where they're ready to hear you, and you're putting in a way of, this is how you could make your project even better. So instead of starting from a negative point of view, you know, it's really positive all the way through. Here's what's great, here's what you could do to make it even better, and then here's what else is great.
Right, and you can accept information that way. You know, years ago, I did the publicity for a book called Radical Honesty by Dr. Brad Blanton. And his approach was, you tell the absolute complete truth all the time, even if it hurts. And his only exception to that rule was if you were hiding Jews in the basement from the Nazis, you could lie to the Nazis. But other than that, you had to tell the truth. And it was, you know, it's a harsh way to go. So, you know, if you've both been through Brad's 8-day workshop and you're prepped for that kind of brutal honesty, go for it. But I sort of like to subscribe to, you know, before anything comes out of my mouth, A, is it true? B, is it kind? And C, is it necessary? You know, and if you can pass that test, then yes, go ahead and give that constructive criticism. You know, what I'd like to do right now is, when I was talking to Liz Pearlie, I made copious notes. Now, Liz Has been at many major New York publishing houses for 25 years as a senior editor. She's also a best-selling author of several books. And as we were talking, you know, it's like, okay, what's the process you would tell this audience if you were speaking to them? And so I'm just going to go through the points, and if you, you know, feel free to interrupt me and we can discuss any one of them. But of course, what's the first thing she says? Writing is something you do every day. Make sure the subject you're examining is something that you can add new insight to and write in a way that will be of interest to a broad audience. And that's something I always tell people. Okay, if you're going to write a diet book, which is, you know, okay, there's a million diet books out there, and every January, at least a couple of new ones become bestsellers. Make sure that you have something fresh and different to say about the topic. Even if it's, you know, the Atkins diet, which has been around forever, and it's a meat-only, no-carbs kind of diet, make sure you're bringing a fresh perspective. Then you want to test the subject on your friends. You know, talk to them about it. And if after 3 minutes their eyes are glazing over, that's not your book. You know, if your friends can't get interested in what you have to say, maybe that's the wrong topic for you. But if they're saying, wow, that's really interesting, then keep going. Make sure that you want to spend the next 2 to 3 years of your life with this subject matter, because that's what it takes to research, write, and rewrite. Okay, 2 to 3 years. And in a few minutes, I'm going to take you through the 5 passes of writing a book, because almost every single best-selling author I've ever talked to told me they rewrote their book 5 times. Don't go to sleep on us now and don't get depressed, but it, you know, it's a long process and it's worth going through. Make sure that you're reading books in your subject area, you know, so that you can roll out your arguments and cover all the material and tell a good story. So you want to be well-versed and understand what's already out there. You also, if you're writing a self-help book or a how-to book, make sure that in the very beginning, you're establishing your credentials as the expert, as the guide for this book, so that the reader can really trust your knowledge and experience. And a lot of times this will show up as the intro for the book. And my personal favorite in this realm is that it becomes part of a personal story. You know, if you're writing a weight loss book and you were once an overweight person and you're a self-made success story, share the pain of your personal story. Or as you, my good partner Mike always says, get vulnerable with your audience. Let them into your life. We know, as we talked about earlier, that most of us work full time. So you have to keep your fingers and your brain moving all the time, always writing. Keep a pad with you, even when you're not at your computer. If you're commuting to work and you're stuck in traffic and you're getting ideas, don't count on your memory. Scribble them down, write them down. And Liz suggests that you commit to writing 1 hour a day, 7 days a week. And she says that if you write 2 pages a day, in 1/3 of a year, you'll have a book. So even though you're going to rewrite this book several times, you can get the first draft done in 4 months or 5 months if you're writing 2 pages a day. And then finally, she says, expect to rewrite. And I'm going to take you through these first passes. She says your first pass at the book is your skeleton. It's just getting your ideas down in the right order. The second pass is when you want to form the muscles and trim the fat. Do you have the right stories, the right examples, the right exercises? Have you put it in sequential sequence? Are you being repetitive? You know, lift out what's unimportant and add in what is. In the third pass, you're going to share this with a friend or somebody you trust and respect, and ask them to be brutally honest about what's clear, what's not clear, and what's missing. We all need these outside voices for clarity. The fourth pass is when you send it to an outside editor, or if you have an agent by then, an agent, so they can give you input. And the fifth pass is taking the editor's advice. So those are the 5 stages of getting to a finished book. And, you know, I know some of you out there are really anxious to get this done, and you've really put yourself on an unreasonable timetable. And I'm here to tell you it doesn't work and it's not necessary. You know, unless you're 93 years old, most of us have plenty of time to do a great job and get this done in the right way. And we have other things to do. You don't want to lock yourself in a cave and say, I'm going to stay here till my book is done. And the only time when I would say that's not true is if you're having this amazing spiritual mystical experience and the voice of God or Jesus or Muhammad or whoever is coming through you and you have no choice but to write and write and write and write till that comes down, and that only happens, you know, once every couple of hundred years. That's the only exception to having to, you know, get it done quickly. Other than that, it's a process. Go easy on yourself. Find good outside editorial help and suggestions, and try to have a good time while you're doing it.
Okay, those are great tips. So I'm going to review something, but it reminded me of a quote. It's a John Lennon quote, which is, life's what happens when you're busy making other plans.
Right, I love that.
Yeah, and the reality is, you know, there's never going to be a perfect time. So if you spend your time waiting around and looking for it, it's not going to happen. You've got to make it, and you've got to make the priorities. So let's just say you create your space, and you have an idea of what your book's going to be. You gather and establish the necessary discipline in your life. Maybe you turn off the kids for a period of time, and you say from 9 to 11 or whatever the time is. And then you follow the five-step process. And then the next big thing, writer's block, kicks in. I'd say out of all these questions where people are saying, how do I get started? The next one I see is, how do I deal with writer's block? And I have my own ideas, but what's your recommendation and observation on that topic?
I don't think I've ever gotten writer's block, but I have gotten blocked on trying to find answers to solutions in other areas of my life. And there's a couple of different things I do. The thing that seems to work the fastest is going for a short walk, just getting outside the environment and getting into nature and breathing some fresh air and seeing some birds fly, you know, and just like remembering that who I am is enough and sort of letting the pressure off instead of, you know, beating myself up. Oh, why don't I have this answer? Why can't I write this page? Go out and breathe. The other thing I like to do is I personally like to take baths. If I can soak in a hot tub or soak in a bathtub and just sort of let my mind wander, that'll work. Showers have also been effective, going for a short drive, but getting out of the environment. Because if you sit there with the whole thought pattern, I'm stuck, I'm stuck, I'm stuck, you are literally stuck to your chair and nothing's moving. So you have to get the energy moving. And, you know, maybe today's not the day. Maybe there are outside circumstances. Things went bad at work. You're fighting with your spouse. Your kid's sick. There's something that really has your attention. You could just say to yourself, you know what? I'm going to give myself a pass for today. And I would say in the process of creating your writing schedule, give yourself 3 passes for a 6-month period where, you know, okay, today I'm going to let myself off the hook and not write that day. You know, if it goes on any longer, then you might want to Google getting over writer's block and look for other ideas. But those are what works for me. What works for you?
Okay, well, there's 2 things that pop into my head. The first of which is, again, it comes from a little quote I remember, which was, lack of movement is death and movement is life. I think you need to start with just change your physiology, which is, you know, if your body's not moving, neither is your brain, and your brain will follow your body. So that would be the first one. And the other one is just breaking your pattern. So what I do is I think of something completely unusual and random that I don't normally do. So if I like rock and roll, I'm going to go to a classical concert. But I'll put myself in an unusual environment. And I find that to be very inspirational.
That's a great idea. Yeah, so I would probably turn on MTV and listen to some rap music, which I normally don't like. And that'll get the brain cells percolating again.
And then there's another thing that you brought up earlier, which is the mastermind group. And I think there's some really important concepts that you can share with the writing process and what you do in the mastermind group. The first one is, you know, when we begin our process, we celebrate first. So in other words, we figure out what our end goal is. So if your end goal is to say, I want to have 30 pages done in the next 45 days, which would be absolutely reasonable, think of a gift you're going to give yourself. Celebrate and go to that place in your mind, you know. So once you go there and you experience what it might feel like to have those 45 pages down, you know, your mind and your body are going to follow down that path. It's sort of like a part of you arrives at that destination.
That's really brilliant. And I read something yesterday that Esther Hicks said that I just loved, where it was about setting up the vibration in your body to have a positive outcome for something. And she was saying, if you're driving from Phoenix to San Diego and you're on, you know, let's say the 8 West, and you know that's the destination you're going to, and it's going to take 4 hours, you know, and you have certainty while you're sitting in the car, that even though you can't see San Diego, you have the expectation and the surety that you will end up in San Diego. And that's sort of the same thing you've just said, that just know that in 45 days, these 30 pages will be written. And the prize, the carrot for you, is maybe you go get a massage, you know, whatever is going to make you happy. That's a carrot out there for you that you get to have. And thanks for reminding me about that, because that is so brilliant and so important to know that there is this little rainbow at the end, or pot of gold, as a mile marker that you can celebrate.
When you're driving, if you've gone the same path over and over again, it seems very short, where if you're on an unfamiliar road, it seems like it takes a long time. And the writing process is exactly like that, where once you've done this once, it's going to be a familiar territory and it's going to go so much easier. So you have to start with, you know, it's again, it's like playing the game as though you already have done it before and you already know
it. Fake it till you make it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, I've used that so much in my life. You know, a couple of years ago had the opportunity to be on the Fox News morning show on a regular basis. Now, I had no training as a broadcaster, but it was something I always dreamed of doing. And certainly I'd watched enough TV my entire life to sort of pretend that I knew what I was doing. And I remember that first day, they said, oh, you know, usually I sat in a guest chair and somebody interviewed me, but this time I was at the anchor desk. And they said, okay, well, today you're going to do the toss to the weather girl and you're going to read the teleprompter. Do you know how to do that? And I said, oh, yeah, of course. I'd never written read a teleprompter before, but I was just sitting there like, yeah, I'm Barbara Walters. I can do this. And it worked out perfectly and it was so much fun. And it's really about, you know, okay, so you're not a published author yet. Sit in your chair as if you really are. And maybe you need to make up a mock cover of your book and have it on the wall in front of you with your name. And just know that this is so, even though it's not in reality, in your physical reality yet, it does certainly exist in, what do we call this, real reality. You know, it is so, even if you can't see. It's like Deepak used to tell this story that, you know, if you want to have more money in your life, it's like planting a garden. You put the seeds in the ground and you water them, but you don't go out every night and tug on the roots to try and make them grow faster. You just know that it is growing in its proper time and it will sprout, as will your book.
Those are really good tips. And that brings us to the psychology of the process as well, which is one thing that, and you've met Dean, he's the acting coach. He teaches authenticity training, but he has one really important lesson, and that is during this process, if you haven't done it before, you're going to be experiencing certain emotions. And it's like when you go on television, for example, you're going to be scared. You're going to be nervous the night before, and you're going to be scared when you're on television. And worrying about being scared and feeling that isn't going to change the fact that you're scared. And what his technique was, and he talked about this, he was going to be on live NPR being interviewed, and he's a guy who teaches people and trains people how to deal with this, and he just paid attention to his emotions and what he was experiencing. So if you become the observer, and then you just accept the fact that you're going to be nervous, you're going to be dealing with these unknowns, and just be okay with that. And that way, now that that's out of the way, now you can focus on the big prize, which again, get yourself in a place where, what's it going to feel like when this is done? What's my experience going to be like? And get to that place, because then you're going to be comfortable with it and the process will move that much easier.
Right, right. And I think this goes back to the celebration aspect of it. You know, when you complete a chapter, even if it's the very first draft that you know is going to change 4 more times, you know, take a moment, or as my sister says in Best Year of Your Life, claim the moment and just say, wow, look at me. I've just completed the first chapter of my first book. I'll never have this moment again of, you know, success and completion. Take a picture of yourself, you know, send the picture to somebody, hold it up and email it to your mother. You know, look, Ma,
I'm writing a book.
This is me writing a book, finish my first chapter and become your own best cheerleader, because writing is a very solitary business. And one thing you mentioned earlier is about, you know, our mastermind group. There are writing groups, or you can start a writing group. I belong to a group called Writing Women. There are 35 of us. We meet once a month. Not everybody shows up, but all of us are writers in one form or another. Some are newspaper writers. Some are researchers. Almost all of us have books in one form or another. One of the women in my group is a veterinarian who writes textbooks on different animals, you know, but she writes, and then she writes funny children's books about animals. So maybe you form your own group, even if it's three or four other people, and support each other.
Right. And the best way of supporting yourself, like in our mastermind group, the way it works is we all have weekly calls. We call for 1 hour. We all have a particular topic that we're jointly working on. And then we discuss, you know, what's working for us. And we all have a buddy. And in our case, I know I talk to my buddy every day, and I think you do too.
Not this week.
Not this week. Okay. Well, and usually we do. And right. and it's a 5-minute call. What's the most important thing that you're doing today? How can I support you? And, you know, what do you need in order to accomplish that? So that way you've got someone you're accountable to. And this gets back to, you know, if you take a picture of yourself and you send it out, I'm writing a book. If you hold yourself to a standard, there's nothing better than a deadline to hold you to an outcome. So if you announce to everyone, I'm doing this and this is what I'm doing, you're going to have people around you who are going to ask you about it. You're going to be in a position where you've declared your intention, and people will support you in that process. And that's just another way to borrow from that concept. And it's not difficult to call up 6 or 8 people who you know who are of like mind. And you say, let's join this group. We all have goals we want to attain. We're going to hold ourselves to a higher standard. We're going to meet once a week. And then, again, in a perfect world, you'll buddy up with someone who you partner with. And all you're doing is just getting on the phone. What did you get done? What did you accomplish? What's the most important thing you have today? And that way, you're getting through that process. And it really, really does magic. I know, speaking for myself, I've had remarkable outcomes over the past half a year since we started doing this.
Right. Deadlines are critical. Deadlines are absolutely critical on all levels.
Now, I have one more technique for the writer's block that I've used myself and I've seen and heard, and it came from a famous copywriter. His name is Gary Halbert, but I know other people have talked about it too, and he calls it the blah, blah, blah technique. And it's very, very simple. When you have nothing to say, you just start typing blah, 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 blah. Because what that's doing is interrupting your brain pattern, and at some point, you're going to think of something. And again, you know, lack of movement is death and movement is life. So just keep moving. And that works miracles. It's amazing. It sounds ridiculous, but it is phenomenally useful.
Yeah. In Julia Cameron's book, The Artist's Way, you know, they do what are called the morning pages. So you commit that every single morning, I think it's 3 pages, you just write stream of consciousness. It could be like, you know, I need to clip my toenails, I need to get a haircut, the grass needs to be cut, the kids need new shoes. But every day you write freehand and you just write and write and write and write. So it becomes a habit that you have muscle memory. So the writing really starts to come through you.
There are 3 other important things. Some of us are very emotional and less cerebral, and some of us are too cerebral and more...
Not enough
right,
emotional.
Not enough emotional. Right. And like, for example, the two of us, we're more cerebral than we are emotional. It's a, you know, typically we associate that with a masculine side. So if you're one or the other, and it's easy to spot what you are, get out of that mode, and that's going to also help the creative process. So, you know, if you're a cerebral, you start your day asking, how do I feel right now? And write about your feelings and your emotions. And if you're the opposite, if you're emotional, start by writing down what you're thinking and focus on your mind. And that way it'll flip you out of your typical mode. That's a great way to jog.
That is a great way. That's a great thought.
There's another technique too, and that is, I call it the modality, which is, you know, you talked about how Deepak sits down with his yellow pad and he writes there. Other people sit down with their laptop. And I know years ago, I found it difficult to be creative when I typed. Now, I don't have that challenge anymore. It's easy for me to just, I can think better with my fingers than I can with, say, with an auditory, with a recording. And I've done products before where I'll just talk, you know, like what we are right now. It's easier to have a conversation and have someone draw out your knowledge. So one technique you can use is to sit down with someone and come up with your outline with your book and have a good trusted friend spend a half a day with you, and you can just sit down with like a cheap $30 or $40 recorder and record a conversation and an interview with you and send that off and have it transcribed. All you got to do is go to Google, you know, type in transcription service, and for $20 to $50 per recorded hour, someone will transcribe it for you, and then you can edit that. And again, you know, sometimes if you're an auditory, which is, you know, you're focusing on listening, you might not be as good with visual stuff like writing. And it's up to you to explore that and figure out what works best. And the other one is change your writing technique, which again is if you type and think well behind a keyboard, use that. But if you have to write, you know, for me, I found that one of the techniques I use to get down my very best ideas is I went to an artist bookstore, and you've seen them before. I always carry my black book. Well, it's a hardcover black book, so it feels like a volume. There's something psychologically powerful about carrying a book and writing in that book, and it's unlined paper. I found I'm more creative with unlined paper than a yellow pad, and I don't like the tattery look of the yellow pad, and to this day, I have a bookshelf going back to when I was 18 years old, so 22 years worth of hardcover books on the shelf. Virtually every idea I've ever had, I have in written format, and you know me, I'm a computer guy.
Right,
I have
right.
Been forever.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
But it's a very, very powerful technique, and I use that as a source of inspiration, too. I open up my 10-year-old books, and it's like, I know exactly, I remember the weather on that day when I open up the page. It brings me back to that moment. I can get connected with an emotion, a feeling, or a sense, and I'm a cerebral. You know, I'm not driven as much by the emotional side. So it's a great way to create a mechanism to and a catalyst for creativity.
Right. I have a small notebook that's a spiral-bound notebook. It's maybe 5x7, something in that range. And I always have one of those in my handbag because I have a bad memory. So every time I get an idea or I see a magazine article or I hear about a website, I just write it down and then I can flip through and say, oh yeah, that's the thing I wanted to look up, or I wanted to let this client know about this. And it's great to keep notes and keep things going. The auditory thing, I know several authors who are speakers, that's how they get their next book ideas, because they record their talks, they have them transcribed, and then they start highlighting, okay, this is a chapter, this goes in that chapter, and that's how they get the focus for their next book. So I'm glad you brought that up. It's a really brilliant idea.
Let's talk about editors and ghostwriters, because, you know, what often happens with so many bestsellers is they write their first book, they do it the hard way. But the second, third, you know, they get tugged on in a lot of directions, and especially if they have a big hit. From that moment forward, their time is so valuable, they can't afford to write their own books anymore. It's simply difficult to make the time. So they start with the inspiration and they work with a team. Can you talk a little bit about that? And is there any way to leverage that as a first-time author?
You can. There's different ways to work with writers. There are freelance editors who will take what you've written and clean it up. There are ghost writers who will just basically sit down and interview you, and they'll write everything, and then you have final say over it. And then there are collaborators. And, you know, quite often you can work with several different people, but of course it's costly. You have to have the budget for it. So the book needs to be representative of your ideas and your expertise and your voice, but you can find writers to work with you. And in the Everything You Should Know program, we list pages of them along with their publishing history, and many of them worked at publishing houses. So we've got a good resource for you there. But as you mentioned, many of them, after they become a bestseller, just don't have the time to sit down and write. So what I've seen some of them do is they'll come up with the concept for the book, they'll outline it, they'll come up with the chapter headings, and then they'll hire one or two people and say, okay, here, now fill in the blanks, and then they'll do a hard edit on top of that. So you don't have to be a good writer, although it's useful to be a good writer. You should know how, you know, how to write a sentence that makes sense. Otherwise, you know, at some point, it's going to be embarrassing. So if you've never written anything, maybe go to your local community college and take, you know, an evening course on writing. I have been writing my entire life, and I still occasionally take writing courses. I always learn something new, and it's good practice.
Finding your voice and finding your subject. I think what most writers who have done it before will eventually say is, look, now that I've done it, I've gone through the process, the quote-unquote writing the book isn't the hard thing, but it's finding the meat, you know, finding something important and unique to say. Do you have any suggestions or techniques on how to leverage and how to get to that place so you know what your voice is, you know what your message is, and you can get connected to it?
Well, you should be out speaking. I mean, if you're out speaking or leading workshops or sharing your information, then it becomes obvious, because the stuff that people want from you, the stuff that they say, wow, that changed my life, that's the meat of your book. You know, if you're living in a cave somewhere or you're isolated and you're not talking to people, it's very hard to know. So, you know, I'd say you have to get involved. You know, we are talking about nonfiction specifically. Fiction writers can hole up in a cave and go into their deep fantasy and create characters and all of that. But for the self-help, how-to, nonfiction, memoir writing people we're talking to, you need to be out there and you need to be sharing your story. I was with a writer yesterday who's in her 80s. And we were meeting with some film producers who were very possibly interested in doing her life story. And of course, they had seen the book that was published. But what they hadn't seen was a manuscript she'd written a few years ago that has never gotten published. And now, after she shared that story with them, it looks like that's probably going to be the movie, the unpublished work, because that's where the juice was. But if she hadn't brought it up, nobody would have ever known about it. So you need to connect. And now there are online communities that you connect with. There are community centers. You can go to Toastmasters and improve your speaking skills and meet people that you could partner with and buddy with. So you don't really have an excuse unless you're living in some part of the world where nobody's speaking English and you can't connect. You need to get out there and become a people person, because all the best-selling authors I know are people. You know, I know that sounds a little weird, but they are comfortable with people. So if you're not comfortable with people, that's your first hurdle.
Go out there and speak. And having that feedback loop is so important. You know, you get other people in your life who are able to respond. And if you can look in their eyes and see the audience, how they react when you're presenting, you're going to know when you're connected with them. You know you're going to be on a roll. And it's sort of like you've got this, you know, if you were a blind person walking and you had your cane, you know, the surface of the ground is like the audience, because you've just got your little cane and you're tapping around, and pretty soon you find your pathway.
Right.
That's an interesting metaphor. But I was talking to a writer that we mutually know. And she's been, you know, up in arms, because it's like, it's going to take me too long. It's going to be too hard to get all these speaking engagements. And what I told her is, look, and she's been writing a little thing. She's got a database of a couple hundred people in her list. I said, here's how we can get you going so you have more inspiration, you have more to talk about, and some more products can come out of you. Let's do a survey to your list. Okay, so we send out a simple survey and we ask them, what are your primary challenges in your life dealing with a certain subject? And so from that, she's going to get some information back. And what I told her she can do is offer a free teleconference. Okay. Now she can get people on the call who have specific challenges, and she already knows basically what they are from the survey, and she can develop these relationships and start speaking through the phone. And you know, and I know we use it all the time,
right?
Freeconference.com. So it doesn't cost you anything to do a teleconference. And now, you know, maybe you just start with people you know. Maybe there's a writer's group. Everyone's got some connections. And you say, I'm going to talk about blah. So you have them show up on your teleconference. It might be 10 or 15 or 20 people. Ask people to tell their friends. And then, you know, you've got a place and a platform. It costs you no money. There's no travel. You could get it going in a week. And free conference for $15, they'll record the call, you know?
Wow.
And then you can have that transcribed. So now you've got a basis for this content. So again, it's not like you have to sit down and make it difficult for yourself to draw out and create content. And again, if you could actually do an entire book and never write yourself, which is do a bunch of conferences on some subjects, maybe a chapter at a time, send that out to be transcribed. You can hire an editor for, I mean, I know of ways if you go to some of the online services, you can get an editor for a couple $100, you know. And, you know, you'd be able to put together the contents from a book and work on it on an organic basis. Now, that might break some of the rules of the traditional writing process, but you know, again, there are so many different techniques and ways to go about achieving your goal, and just keep your eye on the prize, which is what is your outcome? You know, my outcome is to write a book about, you know, how to speak to, you know, 10,000 people and never be nervous.
Right.
You know,
right,
well,
right.
You know, you could do a neat teleclass on that. You could get a lot of people to show up.
Yeah, it's the number one fear in the country is speaking in public, which is why a teleclass is a good place to start. But you still need to go out and be in front of people. Absolutely. And there are so many, you know, nonprofits in every city that would welcome expertise on every level where you, you know, let's say you have no group to speak to. It's like, okay, I've never spoken. How do I start? But you have a body of work. You know, find a nonprofit in your area and say, you know what? I would like to talk to women who've been in abused relationships and I can help them. Self-esteem is my expertise. Are there 6 to 10 women I could do a weekly group with or a bi-monthly group with? And start there. And then all of a sudden, you're going to get these success stories that you have with these women. Now, of course, in that sort of instance, you're not going to use their real names in the book, but you will get permission to change their name into something else and use them. Or maybe someone will say, you know what? You can use my story. You can use my name. And you'll have a combination of the two. But you'll have anecdotal stories. You'll have experience writing. And it will all serve your long-term goal.
Absolutely. And I think to add to that, it's my belief that every single person has a unique gift, a unique story, and a perspective to share. And so right from the start, you're born with a book inside you, even if you don't think there is. There's some observation, some way you look at the world that can and will be useful to other people. And the best way to find out, you know, what that is to just get out there and talk about it. And this is, again, there's cheap, fast, easy ways that are free to start that path. And finding a group to speak to, you know, there's so many clubs and organizations. You know, you just say, I'm offering a free teleclass. It's on this subject. Show up at this date and this time. You could go to Kinko's and print off a couple sheets or your inkjet printer. I mean, you have no cost. And the key, though, I think, is just making a commitment.
Right.
Right? And having a deadline and then making your intentions known. And maybe, again, getting back to your issue of, okay, well, if you want to use these real-life stories, you may just state right there, these will be recorded and will be used, but your name will not be used inside there
unless
without your
you
permission.
Want. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So that way you get around that right away. If you show up, it's being recorded, you understand that, and it's free.
Right. So getting back to where we started with how do you get started, it's about making a commitment first and foremost. I am going to write. And then creating the schedule and, you know, giving yourself a couple of passes for the days when life interferes. And if you find that at the end of the first month, you have not kept your schedule at all, you've used up all your passes, you may want to take a hard look and say, am I really committed to writing this book? Is this the time for me to write this book? Because if you're not doing it, then there's some resistance there, or it isn't the right time. I believe in divine timing. Sometimes there's other stuff that needs to get taken care of. If, you know, if there's a sick child or a sick parent or there's a work thing that's in the way, you know what? Say, I'm going to start next month and then, you know, see if you can stick to that schedule and have consequences, positive consequences and negative consequences.
Right. And there's also environment. You talked about that, which is what is your space that you're in?
Right.
And you know, getting back to if you're not seeing results, change your approach. You know, again, you've got the emotional side, you've got the physiology, you have environment, you've got time and timing, you have the method, which is are you typing, are you writing? You know, I know you know, Vivian, my wife, when she's writing, she goes to Starbucks once in a while. She finds that to be very good for her brain. She's out of the environment. She likes to sit around and sip some coffee. She likes to people watch. And she finds that to be very inspirational. And if something you're doing is not giving you the results you need, change your approach. Change one of these variables.
Yeah, J.K. Rowling, who wrote the Harry Potter books, wrote them all in a coffee shop in Scotland. She lived in a small, dark apartment. You know, her kid was in school. So while he was in school, she was writing in a coffee shop. It can be done anywhere. It just gets back to how committed are you. And environment is critical. You know, if the energy just feels wrong every single place in your house, you know, either call a feng shui person in to help you find some cures or rearrange some stuff, or find an outside location that you can easily get to.
Right, right. And I'll add one more thing to that, which is give yourself the gift now. So if you ask yourself a single question, which is, if I could give myself a gift, a location, a feeling that would motivate me or be useful as a catalyst to get things going, what would it be? And try that. You know, for me, one of my favorite things to do is to go see a movie. So I've got a vow to myself that at least every other week, I'm going to take a block of time off in the afternoon, no matter how busy I am, to go see a movie. And every time, I always get that time back with multiples. You know, it's like that plus interest. And it's the same thing about exercising. You know, I hire a personal trainer. I go down and I work out. It gets me out of my environment, out of my space, and I always feel great. And so just taking care of your body is another thing you can't underestimate, you know. It's your diet, too. All these things are factors.
Right, and that actually brings up another point, is you have to really know your own body well enough to know when the best time of day for you to work is. You know, like I know that, you know, mornings and weekends are really good for me, but between 3 and 5 in the afternoon, my brain just goes a little fuzzy. It's my worst time to get stuff done and to think. So a lot of times that's when I'll go for a walk. So, you know, really spend some time thinking about your schedule for writing, your time of day, your environment, your location. Are you going to first have somebody interview you for a long period of time and transcribe it and work off of that? Are you going to handwrite? Are you going to write on a PC or a laptop? And try out a few things. You know, if the first one doesn't work, that doesn't mean you weren't meant to write the book. Just say, okay, this isn't working. How can I create a new space, a new time, until you find something that works? When my sister writes, she writes, you know, usually she'll get up at 3 in the morning. She'll just automatically wake up from 3 to 5 a couple of nights a week to write. And then she'll always have several hours on a Sunday when she knows she's going to write. That's her schedule. That's what she sticks to. Everybody who works with knows, oh, that's Debbie's writing time. We don't interfere with that. You know, and then I'm there beating her on the head going, hey, you have a deadline. You have a deadline. You know, I think that the thing to really remember is that just like giving birth to a baby is a monumental process and a big life change situation, so is giving birth to a book. It doesn't happen any faster. In fact, 9 months would be a fast amount of time to have a book appear. So create reasonable expectations. You know, if figure out how many pages you want to write in a week. And I would say for most people, 10 pages a week would be plenty. And then figure out, am I going to write 2 pages a day, 5 days a week? Or am I going to write 3.5 pages, 3 days a week? Create the schedule, give yourself a couple of passes. At the end of 30 days, go back and see, did you accomplish your goals? And if you didn't, look and see, is the environment wrong? Is my lack of commitment missing? Were there too many interruptions? Did I not create the right boundaries in my situation? You know, and then start again and make sure you've got at least one buddy who is going to be responsible for receiving your 10 pages at the end of each week. It doesn't matter whether or not they read them. They don't have to be able to give you feedback on them. Just know that they're the person that holds you accountable. So if you say, by Sunday, 6 p.m. every week, I'm going to email you my 10 pages, and they don't get them, that there is some consequence that you don't want to fulfill, whether it's, you know, $500 to the political party you can't stand or whatever. And, you know, that's the schedule to start. And if you see that it's not working, that you're not writing, then you're going to have to really have a conversation with yourself is this the right time for me to be writing a book? I'll bet that you can rearrange your life and get it done. Every best-selling author I've ever worked with, writing the book wasn't the hard part. They actually said at the end of the day, writing the book was the easy part. It was promoting the book that was the hard part, but that's a whole different conversation. Mike, thanks so much for doing this with me. This has just been great.
It's been my pleasure.